Okay, what would you like to do, Michael?
Let's do a show.
Welcome to the Gospel Revolution Powercast for the 11th of April 2013, coming to you from the Gospel Revolution Studios right here in Nashville, Tennessee, where we're linking up once again with the founding president of the Gospel Revolution from GRHQ in beautiful Houston, Mr. Michael Williams.
Good evening, Barris Bartlett.
G'day, Mike. How are you, mate?
I just don't know that I've ever been better.
I have.
How about yourself?
Oh, man, I have outside my window Tennessee mockingbirds trilling away. I've got a couple of beautiful, gorgeous, flame-red cardinals. And I just built myself a bird feeder, and there they are, all gorging themselves while I'm starving here talking to you, mate.
Well, you need to go perch on the bird feeder, then.
Okay. I wondered how you were going to finish that sentence. Crikey. So stay with us, folks, for a packed show, as they used to say in the old days.
Webcasting to the world.
Do you remember the moment that you saw yourself in God and God in you, and you were one with the universe and God and everybody?
Knowing the truth about the gospel.
You were one with the prostitutes and pimps and priests and kings, and there was nobody on earth that was better than you nor less than you.
That we are all righteous.
And no one on earth was any less in Christ than anyone else.
That's Mike Williams, and this is the Gospel Revolution.
What was the most interesting thing happened to you this week, Michael?
You know, I always know this question is coming and I'm never prepared, which I guess is what makes this such a delight for you to ask, right?
Always. I'm just trying to catch you up. I'm just trying to trip you up and make you look human, like the rest of us.
Well, I'm afraid that the story that I have to share is probably not going to do that, actually. It's going to be just the opposite.
Let me guess. It's about you taking people to a coffin museum? No?
No, it wasn't nowhere near that good.
About your diet?
Nowhere near that good either.
You went out and got some vanilla icing?
Nowhere near that good either. But it was good.
You're just trying to sound mysterious now, I know it.
Actually, this took place last evening, and I woke up about four or five times, having had just the most wonderful dreams. I mean,
you had a wonderful sleep last night, and it involved waking up four or five times. You do realize,
yes.
You do realize what you're saying, don't you?
I do, but when you wake up four or five times with this big smile on your face, just simply because of what you've been dreaming, and they were so inconsequential, there's no need in even relating the stories of the dreams, but just about camaraderie and closeness and working through things and just people being helpful and me helping people. It was just fantastic. Actually, before the PowerCast, that night I always do wake up probably more times than usual, just simply because I got a certain time that I need to be up.
Well, actually, it's talking to me. It does that to people, mate.
Yes, I know. And I was thinking, you know, this simply is happening because I know that I get to talk to my buddy Barris. You milked that one out of me, didn't you?
Keep it up, mate. Oh, that was the story.
That was it.
Oh, your really interesting week.
What else do you want?
Your interesting week was that you woke up five or six times last night.
Yes.
And felt good about it.
Well, so you're speaking evangelistically now. I said four or five. You said five or six. So, you know, what's it going to be next? Oh, my gosh.
And their nets broke. The fishes were that great.
I spend the day with my radio on. I love to sing along with the songs they play. It makes the whole day seem like fun. I spend the day with my radio on.
Why don't you spend your day with the radio on? Every day it's different, every hour it changes. But you could be listening to the Gospel Revolution radio station right now at gospelrevolution.radiostream123.com. That is gospelrevolution.radiostream123.com. Listen up to Mike Williams and the Gospel Revolution. Go on, spend your day with the radio on.
Happy or sad, I spend the day with my radio, day with my radio, day with my radio on.
Gospel Revolution.
Michael, this week we were really emotionally, it felt like we were bombarded with the incredible tragic news of the death of the son of Rick Warren. Just the saddest thing.
No doubt, Barris. From the Gospel Revolution, from Mike Williams Ministries, we want to extend all of our love and compassion to this family. Rick Warren's son was 27 years old. I just spoke with my daughter last night on the phone. My daughter's just turning 27, Rick Warren's son being 27. Just such a tragedy. Everyone in the Gospel Revolution has nothing to add to any of the grief that this family has. My heart bled when I heard about this. And then you see this young man's face, you know, with this beautiful smile and just a tragedy. So we love you guys. We know you'll probably never hear this, but we do want to extend our condolences and our love to you and your family and to all involved.
Whenever I hear of somebody who's passed in this manner, Mike, I always think of how quickly many of us are to point out that Judas Iscariot must be in hell. If for no other reason, he suicided, and it just seems to me to be a break in logic there.
Well, there certainly is even more than a break in logic. It's a total breakaway from any understanding of the gospel. And the all-inclusive power and work of the cross. This young man, beyond the shadow of a doubt, in anything that I can understand about the gospel, stepped out of this world into the presence of God, into what we call heaven. There's definitely nothing, any evidence that would support that this young man somehow missed that or went to a place of correction or temporary torture, eternal torture, alienation, separation of any degree, but that the work of the cross was simply and wonderfully good enough for situations just like this, that no matter how tormenting life can be, and no matter what means life ends, that it is the eternal things that Jesus took care of. This young man's mental illness was temporary, regardless of whether he had lived 27 years or 87 years. It was a temporal thing. And we know from the gospel that Jesus took care of all things eternal. So while things in this life can work out good, they can turn out bad, they can be a horrible tragedy, they can be blissfully wonderful. The thing that God has done through the blood of Jesus, he didn't die so that we could have enough money in our bank account. He didn't die so that we could make sure that we avoid all health issues, as is proposed by the group that I came out of. But he died to make sure that there would be no alienation, no separation between himself and any human being on the face of this earth, regardless of their actions, deeds, beliefs, age, or any other dividing thing that we would see here on this planet. In Christ, there is no division. There is no separation whatsoever, ever in this life or the next.
Now, there's a common belief that if you die, you get a chance of going to heaven. But if you take your own life, then you're going straight to hell. Do not pass go. Do not collect $200. Go straight to hell through a chute in the basement. That's it. You're done. And so forth. And I'm wondering, where do you suppose the necessity to believe that came from? Could it be that my last unforgiven or unshriven act in this life was one of murder, even if it's murder of myself, and thus I'm eternally lost or something? Is that perhaps where it came from originally?
Well, that's what was explained to me as I was learning my Christianity, was that you can't go to heaven with unconfessed sin. And you can't confess the sin of suicide until you're dead. And when you're dead, you can't confess it. So therefore, based on a technicality, no matter how much you would swallow the pills or whatever, you're getting ready to jump off the bridge and say, you know, God, forgive me for what I'm about to do. You can't be forgiven for what you're about to do. You can only be forgiven for what you have done. Even in the mystic world and in Buddhism, suicide is something that takes you to a different level of life to do this somehow differently in another life. You know, one thing I've learned in studying what little bit I have about Buddhism and mysticism, in particular those, is that because it is not based on a knowledge or teachable language, virtually anyone can have their own definition of Buddhism and what that actually means. So as we segue from this point, you've got to understand that when we quote these things, we're quoting people who seem to have a degree of authority about it. But at the same time, you are going to find other people who would say, oh, no, 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 that's not mysticism at all. That's not oneness, and that's not nirvana, and that's not karma. There's going to be a lot of opinions about it because it is an experience-based belief system. The mystic and the Buddhist do have an understanding of oneness, which we're going to go into that in a little bit. I'm going to leave that for a moment. But I want to go into the comparison between oneness and one, because there is a difference.
The comparison between oneness,
yes,
and one.
Yes, O-N-E. Uh-huh. And see, I thought all this time that the oneness that mysticism teaches and one, which the gospel teaches, were synonymous in conclusions. And I found out they are not. I think everybody knows I'm just a Jesus man. I am a scripture man. I am a gospel man. I make no apologies for that.
Not going to be swayed on that one, huh?
Virtually everything about Christianity I've changed my mind about. What Jesus did, I've not changed my mind about that at all. In fact, I believe it more now than I ever did under Christianity. You see, I can engage with anyone and find a camaraderie in their mysticism, and it's going to bring a sense of camaraderie. One of the things that I became aware of as I've listened to several of the mystics is my heart was going out to them. I never will forget the comment one of them made that if you don't spend at least 2 hours first thing in the morning in meditation, whatever that may be, now they'll leave that up to you as to whatever that is. So there again, what the practice is and what it means can be defined by anybody any way they want it, but they are very absolute about this practice.
But the practice, generally speaking, always seems to involve the subjugation of the body to the mind or to the spirit or soul or whatever you want to call it.
Yes, it is this struggle between, in Christian terms, spirit and flesh. That's the way Christianity would define it. See, these things are not new. These are all Christian challenges and doctrines just repackaged in other languages. The thing that I've observed is that I know people that don't have 2 hours in the morning to give to this. And those are things that bother me when people become so exclusively spiritual in their practice that attains what should be available for everyone, that involves things that not everybody can do.
Wasn't this at the base of the concept of monasteries and nunneries? Particularly, I'm thinking of a book called Practicing the Presence of Christ, was it, by Brother Lawrence? And his whole, yeah, he had the time to do all of that, but he had to get out of the employment of a nobleman as his carriage driver and go to a monastery to be able to have the time to do that, didn't he?
Yes. There's something inherently flawed about this as far as it being universal. You know, they're talking about oneness, and yet only a select few can experience it by virtue of the process you seem to have to go through. Every one of these people, just like on the documentary that you and I sat here and watched together also, it seemed that every one of these people had dropped out of their everyday regular life.
So it becomes either earn a living and take care of your family or discover perfection.
Yes, one of the two. And then people who do have everyday lives and who are not able to do this, they are the ones who plan the pilgrimages to these people to sit in their presence, to pick up what they've got and go back to their lives, because they really, you know, they don't have the choice to, well, I suppose they would have the choice, but they choose not to leave the kids and, you know, the dad and the job and their responsibilities behind. So it creates this hierarchy. I know that no one in the Buddhist or mystic community would be pleased with me making that comment, but the fact of it is it creates a spiritual hierarchy just like Christianity does. Wonderful thing about the gospel is you don't have to travel anywhere to come and sit at my feet or anything. We've got so many ways you can listen, it's not even funny.
But isn't that what we see? Benny Hinn meetings, Joyce Meyer meetings. I mean, women travel from all across the USA to go to a Joyce Meyer meeting. Isn't that the same thing at work?
It really is, and that's really what I was comparing it to, is Christianity. That's the thing that the Buddhists and the mystics especially don't want to be compared to, is anything to do with Christianity. But the terminology seems to be repackaged Christianity to me.
Well, in the case of Buddhism, which predated Christianity by several centuries, it's the same human struggle, just with different terms, really, isn't it?
Yes, and I'm not surprised that this struggle was brought out in Buddhism before the cross, but see, this struggle was ended at the cross. The thing that the Buddhist has missed is that their struggle for nirvana, the cessation of karma, the destruction of dogma, took place at the cross. I would not be surprised if there were other religions that had these, which they would not call it works-oriented, but you can't tell me sitting in a certain position for 2 hours and humming at a certain tone or wearing a certain garb, that's not works. It is works. Now, please understand that we're not trying to persuade someone away from Buddhism, but this ministry's goal is to share the gospel of grace and peace. And by separating the gospel out of religion, the comparison then became so crystal clear. It seemed foolish for many people, it did for me, to remain a Christian. We so assumed that the gospel and Christianity were the same, just like Bishop Spong, who doesn't believe any of basic Christian tenets of the faith, such as the virgin birth or the need for the cross or the resurrection. Any of these things were needful for redemption or taking care of sin at all, yet he still calls himself a Christian. I think he is wanting to revamp Christianity. Please understand, we're not trying to redo Christianity. We're not trying to get Christianity straightened out. I agree with Bishop Spong in this. It's hopeless. As far as the gospel is concerned, there is nothing that Christianity holds to bring a revelation of the gospel.
Well, let's have a look at that for a moment. Christianity says that to be a Christian, it involves a life of change.
Mm-hmm.
As I understand it, the gospel says that the whole cross of Christ and the whole thing which started the Christian era is about exchange.
Yes.
And the whole concept with karma is what goes around comes around.
Mm-hmm.
So,
now, but you've got to understand that you will have Buddhists who will say, oh, no, 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 that's not what karma is. But that is what karma is. And it can be defined in many different ways, and with really pleasant smiles on the face too at the same time. But at some point, you got to stop trying to nail Jell-O to the wall. And these are basic common understandings to the larger degree, even though you will have other Buddhists who disagree with that.
So Christianity has to do with change. The gospel has to do with exchange. Karma has to do with you reap what you sow in some manner or another. And yet the gospel is the only one amongst those that says, I'm taking your karma and giving you my karma.
Yes.
Okay.
And that's a good way of using their language to be able to explain the gospel. But see, what you did by saying that is you interrupted even their thought about even what karma might be, that there could have been an exchange of karma, because there is no teaching of exchange of karma that I know of in Buddhism. However, I think you could find a Buddhist who would say there is.
Tell me the difference between one and oneness. I'm not sure if I've missed what you're trying to say, Michael, but I'm not sure if I've seen the difference yet.
Well, I Google searched, which we know that's where all knowledge is. I Google searched the term mystic and the term one. They do not show up together. One mystic would say this and one mystic would say that. But as far as the term one in mysticism, I typed in mystic or in mysticism, and then I typed in Buddhism. And
So there's no oneness about oneness?
There's no one about oneness.
Okay.
So I typed in one. And Buddhism, and it doesn't show up. I typed in oneness with Buddhism and mysticism and mystic, and whoa, I mean, you get a tidal wave. So I began to realize that the term one really is not connected to mystic belief. It is oneness. And again, even though we're probably going to have some mystics and Buddhists who would disagree with this, but from what I read, it seemed to be fairly consistent. In the mystic perception is an attainable state of mind. Attainable oneness is an attainable state of mind or awareness.
You're going to have to help me here, mate. Oneness is an attainable state of mind.
Yes.
So this is oneness between you and you?
It is a oneness between you and everything else that you have come to this reality in your mind. So oneness is not one. And this is where the mystic will explain to you there's no words for this.
So one is not two, it's one. But oneness is an amalgam of many. Is that what I'm hearing?
Well, let me say it this way. Oneness is a state of mind, and one is a state of being. One is struggling for a state of mind, and one is what we have been brought into through the work of the cross.
Uh-huh.
We look also to this change of mind, but what the person who understands the gospel has is the subject of one to help the mind come to a state of oneness, if you will. We'll use their terminology in this. But where the mystic is concerned, they do not have the teaching of one to help support their process of coming to a state of oneness.
Oh, I think I'm seeing now.
All right. Finally. Jeez.
Be patient, Michael. Be patient. I am but a little child.
Uh, um, So there is a difference, and I didn't realize that. I've always thought that this oneness and this one was one thing. And I was really surprised to find out that we really are not talking about the same thing, that there is not a definitive teaching, because the mystic would say there is no knowledge that will bring you to oneness, that it is strictly an experience.
So the question then has to be asked, well, how do you know when you've attained it if you don't know what it is?
I know. If you don't, but you'll know when you got it. Oh. That's the wonderful thing about it. You know when you got it. So when I've got it is based on whether or not I say I've got it. And who knows whether I've got it or not. I don't even know for sure that I've got it.
So this is hardly an objective thing. This is just as subjective as, geez, am I born again or have I lost it? Am I saved today or am I lost? Do I have it? Am I in the will of God? What's the difference?
I think it is even more subjective than Christianity. Because in Christianity, at least if you are a Baptist, they've got their knowledge base down to define that. If you're Catholic, they've got their knowledge base down to define that. Pentecostal and whatever the branch or breed of Christianity is. And those things are subjective in a certain arena of understanding of knowledge. With mysticism, there is no body of knowledge. It is completely subjective to each and every individual's conclusions and their own definitions of what they have experienced. And again, the thing that I come away with is a compassion. I feel for them. I sit and I listen to these wonderful people. Please don't get me wrong. I am not speaking of the mystic in this to negate what they've experienced. Oh, my gosh.
You're not referencing their sincerity. You're referencing, I guess, their logic.
Yes, absolutely. I think the sincerity is amazing, and their experience. I'm not doubting their experience whatsoever at all. I've listened to many of them, and they were on their way to work. They were in the middle of a crisis, or they visited the Grand Canyon, or it can either be good things, bad things, tragedy, or a moment of silence that suddenly there is this experience. And I believe that their experience is based in truth. Now, let me explain that. The gospel teaches us that the entire human race and God were all made one with each other and with God, Jew, Gentile, God, all became one through the work of the cross. Now, that reality is a part of our heart genetics. The heart knows this from conception. You come into this world with the heart knowing this. That gets educated away from us by the mind being taught performance and works-based religion, or just not any information at all.
So we come into the world perfect, holy, righteous, and we've actually got to be taught that we're bad.
I think that is correct.
Uh-huh.
And I think that not only do we come into this world perfect and righteous and holy, but we have an intuitive knowledge to that. We have a heart knowledge of that. It does get covered over quite rapidly. By the time a parent starts beating their child and taking the route that we've been taught has to be taken to try to train up a child, which, please let me reference my teaching series on Proverbs. It is vitally important, I believe, to understand this issue of raising children and the issue of Proverbs pertaining to raising children. We did this, I guess, about a year and a half ago or so.
In that series, did you cover the thought that when you got to beat the bad out of a kid, when do you know that you beat all the bad out of him?
I don't think we covered that in particular, but that's certainly a valid question. The verse that's used is that from Proverbs is evil is bound up in the heart of a child, and the rod of correction will drive it far from him.
Didn't work for me, mate.
Yeah, I know.
And the more it didn't work, the more beaten I got.
Yes. And the more beating you get, the more damage, and it's not just to the body. The distortions of what life is, what love is, what relationship is, can become a lifelong struggle to try to sort those things out from that. And this gospel takes us to that point of resolving even those things about corporal punishment with children. Do take advantage of that. If you have any questions about it, at least add this to your repertoire of information pertaining to raising children.
Now, the place to get that is at www.gospelrevolution.org. On the front page, there is a sign that says that all of our MP3s are available. Down on the left-hand side of the page, you'll see what does Proverbs have to do with it, and you can download that and go there now and get it. It's very, very good. And it's very, very cheap.
All around the world, more and more people have stopped going to church. In the United States alone, almost 3 million walk out of church every year and never go back. Could it be the conflicting message of a loving God that will torture many in a place called hell was just a little too much? Could it be that the gospel is good news for everyone, the whole world, and not just good news for few and bad news for most? Could it be that there is no division of people, some sinners, some saints? The number one reason people gave for leaving church was they did not believe their pastors were telling them the gospel truth. And they were right. If the gospel truth is not good news for everyone, it's not good news for anyone. 1. The Gospel According to Mike by Mike Williams. Available at bookstores, Amazon.com, and other fine retailers.
1 is now available as an ebook at Amazon.com and BarnesandNoble.com for a limited time only, at the introductory price of just $3.99. Available also in hardback and paperback.
Gospel Revolution.
I'm just looking at a quote here by Sensei Made, who is actually a leading Aikido practitioner. And I'm just, are you on the same page as I'm here? Can you see this page I'm on, Michael, where he's quoting Rinban?
Yes, we are. The quote is that finding oneness in diversity can only happen if we have the deep conviction that everyone else is above us. And then, of course, the person who's quoting him says, and who of us truly has this conviction? So this is really very insightful into the mystic perception that it's really the oneness, they're saying, can only come when we view everyone else as above us. Now, the interesting thing about the gospel,
you can have union in that, you can have uniformity in that, but I don't see how we can have, how can that be one?
It can't be one.
Oh, okay.
You might be able to have oneness, but you can't have one. That's not one. Because if something is above something else, which they would completely reject the issue of God being above human or human being God. But when it comes to this definition of finding oneness, that it can only be found when we have the conviction that everyone is above us. The first place you're going to have to come to is that no one is that in Christ, that no one is better than you and no one is less than you.
Well, that's the thrust of Paul's writings when he says there's no Jew, there's no Gentile, there's no slave, there's no free, there's no male, there's no female. Isn't that what he's saying?
Yeah. Yes, and he's saying there's none above us. Now, the interesting thing is that in the conclusion of the gospel, this is even bringing God into the equation of one, that this equality with God is just profound in the gospel, and that we are one with each other. Equality is a very powerful thing. I just don't see how even the oneness, the ascended mentality, or the ascended awareness, whatever one might call it, I just don't see how that can even be a part of our awareness until we understand equality, that all are equal, not one above another, but in absolute equality. I have found that when I see someone as higher than me or above me, I can definitely feel a sense to serve someone who is above me, but I can't truly love.
Hey, what you're talking about there, though, is the hierarchy concept. The Muslim mystic, his religion is based on the fact that there are Muslims and that there are other people out there who are very, very, very obviously not Muslim and should be dealt with. The Hindu mystic, his Hinduism is based on the fact that there are different castes. Christian mystics, their religion is based on the fact that there is you and then there is me and we can't both be right, Catholics versus Protestants and so forth. It's difficult to see how oneness can exist in that kind of a context.
Well, my perception of it all is that it cannot. When we get right down to it, you know, love really is the thing that, if we're going to talk about nirvana, loving others, loving yourself would probably be something that would be certainly on the goal of being attained in this life, to truly love others. But if I see somebody as above me, I cannot truly love them. It's just not possible. If I see somebody,
you can respect, you can obey, you can.
I can do all of that
stuff, but
you'll never know whether or not I love you.
Yeah,
because love can only be truly expressed where equality is a complete reality. See, I can't even love somebody I see less than me. If I see the guy on the street who is homeless and ragged, the only way I can truly love him is if he is my equal. If I see him as less than me, I can be benevolent. I can be generous.
Patronizing,
condescending. I can be all of those things, but they all fit in the same realm. But none of them are love. Equality is where love exists, and it is the thing that causes the mind to be able to conceive even the notion of love.
Do you get the impression that the multitude of differing concepts within mysticism as a genre simply speak the confusion of mind that exists within people who are trying to attain enlightenment, or be whatever path that is, Christianity or not?
Well, it speaks confusion to me. I mean, it speaks of confusion. There just doesn't seem to be anything that is firm to stand on. And I know that that's one of the things that the mystic, they don't want anything firm to stand on.
They don't want anything firm to stand on.
No, the thought that there's something solid or absolutely correct is just absolutely unacceptable.
Why do you say that?
Because of my conversations with and listening to them.
But I thought the very thing about enlightenment or the pathway to or the search for enlightenment, I thought that was predicated by the obvious desire to want to know the truth.
It is definitely predicated upon that, but the fact of it is that they always revert to the fact that there are no words for this.
Huh.
So I don't know what truth is that cannot be defined by words.
Huh.
Now, I want to go into this issue of being above and below just a little bit more, just to show you where the cross addresses this, and these guys don't have a clue. And to be someone who is, quote, a seeker of truth, a seeker of nirvana, a seeker of oneness, which is oneness is something you seek. It's not something you have, according to the statements of the mystics that I've read and some of the Buddhists that I've read. But now, Paul said that even those that were not under the law became a law unto themselves.
Romans chapter 1. Yeah.
Yes. Could Paul have been referring to people such as this, who, even though they didn't know the law, they developed a karma unto themselves, that this was in existence indeed before the cross? and even those that didn't know the law developed a law for themselves. Obviously, they did. Whether or not this is what Paul was talking about, it certainly fits within this concept. Hebrews lays out for us a very powerful equality message, and that is that there's this whole restructuring of creation, thus the new creation. The new creation is reestablishment of divine order. In the first creation, of course, we've got God, and then the next thing we have in the spiritual world is the angelic realm. Of course, angels were around before mankind, the best we can tell. Man was created, according to Hebrews, a little lower than the angels. God, angels, man. But the problem here was that between God and man, there was a part of the angelic world that took on the human race and led to what Genesis describes as this deception and this partaking of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. What is the repair for that? This is the story of equality and oneness, and it is completely rejected by the mystics. They seem insulted by the thought of the cross. But Paul teaches in Hebrews that God became a man to rescue man out from under this fallen angelic realm. He became a man. He became a little lower than the angels also. So he entered man's realm. Then, through the work of the cross, Jesus took the entire human race into himself. And then he died. Thus, that first generation born under the first Adam was taken into the body of Christ. The whole generation died. That was the last generation. And then when Christ rose from the dead, he ascended into the presence of God with the whole of humanity in him. So now we have God and man and all humanity, not one above another, but absolutely all in an equal state.
But hang on, I think you've just described oneness, haven't you? But you've also just described one.
One and oneness altogether because of this miraculous intervention of God into the life of the human race and taking us outside of our will into himself and restructuring creation. The new creation cannot be described as a more blissful place than we had before the cross. But what we have is humanity coming out of the other side of the cross, equipped with God, equipped with equality. Now, working that out between our ears is the process of the renewing of the mind.
You wouldn't be meaning enlightenment, would you?
It is not a term that is biblical, but it certainly is a term that can be used.
Well, what would nirvana be then?
Nirvana is, of course, reaching that ultimate place of oneness, which is not based on being one. So it is like a goal that has no sustainable facts behind it.
That's right. We used to play a game called Blind Man's Bluff when I was a kid. It was a bit like pin the tail on the donkey. But it sounds a lot like pin the tail on the donkey, but there ain't no donkey there. You're never going to get what you're going for.
Yes, and you don't even have a tail to pin to the donkey.
Well, you do, but you don't have words to explain it.
Now, I
want in on this. This is a good deal. I mean, it can be whatever I say it is. And by the way, it's a very hard place to get to. And if you want to get there, just send your tithes and offerings.
Yes, absolutely. Help us to help others achieve nirvana. Now, first off, I am being very facetious. Barris is just being Barris. So
I've just been off my meds, mate, again. I'm sorry.
I want to reiterate my feelings about this issue of the mystic's experience and the Buddhist perception. I admire it. I greatly admire it. I've always said that Buddhism is a clearer expression of the work of the cross than Christianity is. Now, I realize that's not giving Buddhism much of an edge. I believe the gospel, Bears. I make no apologies for that. I believe it's the truth. I believe that it is the means by which we became one, to which a reality of oneness can be realized by each and every person based on something that's factual true. Now, we divorced the gospel from Christianity a few years back for the purpose of clarity. And since that happened, there's been really wonderful things that have taken place, actually, for many of us. When it comes to what is best for the mind in its ability to resolve the conflict that takes place in this life and come to peace with it, come to terms.
To become an observer,
dealing with loss, all of these things. The gospel is primo. Take us back to the 60s. It's primo. It is the number one thing that can achieve that in our lives. Now, there's obviously belief systems that are more damaging than others. There are belief systems that put weapons in people's hands to destroy other people that would fit way down on the list of healthy ways to think. I do believe the gospel is the healthiest way to think on this planet.
I was just thinking as you were saying that we have, it's almost like the best of all worlds. We have the situation of us being one with the Creator and with each other.
Mm-hmm.
We have oneness that exists in at least this respect, that we are able to listen to each other, look at each other and say, well, I don't know if I exactly agree with all of that, but I do know one thing. We're headed in the same direction.
Mm-hmm.
And when cause and effect, religion or belief systems tempt us to engage with them, we can actually take one step backward and become an observer in our own evolution into this oneness.
Mm-hmm.
And that is extraordinarily peaceful.
It is. I can attest to the peacefulness of this. Now, I'm not sure that anyone is ready for what I'm about to say. And that is my number two in my list. The second most beneficial belief system, second only to the gospel.
Number one, the gospel.
Is the gospel.
And here it is, ripping up the charts with a golden bullet, right? Is number two. What is it, mate? Come on, spill it.
Number two is atheism.
Oh, there you go. See, we always get so far through a show before you go and spoil it with something like that. You can spend the rest of the show trying to dig your way out of this hole now, Mr. Williams.
Now, let me tell you that before this last few weeks, I would have said that number one would have been the gospel, number two would have been Buddhism. But in this research, and then I'm admitting right up front, it is limited, but I also have to tell you that my limitation is really there because of the subjectiveness of the teachings. I can quote you many people, but I can find you many people that's going to disagree with those quotes. The thing I love about the gospel is its consistency. Any part of it is a fractal of the rest of it. If you explain one point of the gospel, it has the ability to explain all of the gospel. Whether you're talking about sin, righteousness, judgment, redemption, any of these terms, I can take any of those terms, Barris, and explain the entire gospel from that one thing. And it will explain all the rest of them, even in the process of that. So, Buddhism has been replaced in my mind as number two on the docket of healthy belief systems. It has been replaced by atheism. Now, my number three healthiest belief system in my understanding.
Number one, the gospel revolution. Number
yes.
two, in undisputed second place now, after Buddhism took a king hit in the ring of logic, is atheism. And now we're going to hear what number three is. Okay.
Number three is Buddhism. Because the Buddhist mindset, as far as general daily life mindset, is far healthier than that of other religions. Buddhism does not want to be called a religion, but it is a practice of a certain way of believing, therefore it does classify as a religion.
It surely is a faith structure of a kind.
Absolutely. It is also a cause and effect. Spirituality, it is definitely cause and effect.
And anyway, the fact that Buddhism is not a religion might only be the opinion of some Buddhists anyway.
Yes, some Buddhists. In fact, I have to say that because I actually got that in reading about this, that some Buddhists agree that it is indeed a religion and some emphatically say it is not. And then number four.
Oh, you've gone further than I expected. Let me guess. It's Presbyterianism.
From Buddhism, just get out the shotgun because let the buckshot fly because you might as well have one as much as the other because all of it pretty well falls in the same category as best I can tell as being very unhealthy way to think about life. And let me reserve this right. I have had this order reordered. I have the right to reorder it again someday, should I choose.
If the Bible is all about Jesus, don't you think that most churches would mention him with at least the same frequency as they mention all of their favorite dogmas and doctrine and all those rules of your particular brand of religion? Tithing, moralism, Old Testament law, abortion, gays, politics, all hail the leader, persecution, the end times, don't forget the bloody rules, God's perfect will for your life, fleeing youthful lusts, rock music, speaking in tongues, the coming kingdom, worldliness and how to escape it, those pesky rules, don't forget them, heresy, prophecy, soul-winning missions, offerings, wrong doctrine, right doctrine, and don't forget all those bloody rules, relationships, long hair, short hair, dyed hair, liberalism, greasy grace, Adam and Eve, not Adam and Steve, dispensationalism, and rules, never ending bloody rules, and Calvinism, Arminianism, a missionary service, Sunday school, swearing and cussing, besetting sins, sexual purity, oh, and give us some more rules, won't you? False prophets, confession, dress code, mixed swimming, dancing, movies, television, dating, oh, and did I mention the freaking rules?
I really went into looking at mysticism and Buddhism with the attitude of affirming what they are saying, because I believed that oneness and one were the same things, but I have found out that oneness and one are not.
Well, hang on. Is that it? Is mysticism over now? Are we going to move on to something else? The higher life of goldfish or something? I was expecting a year full of...
Oh, we're still going to do it. We've just slotted them in a position for examination now a little bit closer.
Oh, boy, you sounding like Christian more and more now, mate.
I know. But we will proceed from here. I do want to listen and understand the mystic a bit more. I'm willing to examine the possibility that some of my conclusions to this point are incorrect.
Well, let's just – can we just – talk about that for a moment. Is that possible? Can I interrupt you here?
Sure, why not?
I wanted to invite you to explain to our listeners that we are on a... Well, let me say where I think we're at. We're on a journey, and we have decided to be naked, so to speak, in front of you, to experience this journey in the open view of you, our listeners. When you're listening to us talk, often you're not listening to our conclusions as much as you're listening to us work our way towards our conclusions.
Yeah.
Now, when we reach a conclusion, you'll know it. Because those of you who've been around the Gospel Revolution for very long know that there have been changes in our way of saying things or even believing things in the past. And where we've kind of stuttered our way around the periphery of these things, when we discovered the real truth, we just aimed at it and we have never diverted since then. Would that be a fair comment, Michael? Do you want to weigh in here?
Yes, I think that is a very fair observation of this. There are times that I see it as one of my faults in life, and that is that I learn out loud. I know it's not politically correct to learn out loud. I know you're supposed to learn and then get up and say what you mean and then stick with it for the rest of your dying days.
Well, you're certainly not supposed to say, I could be wrong. I mean, that is just showing too much weakness, isn't it?
It seems to be showing a tremendous amount of weakness and even vacillation. But see, I'm comfortable with learning. I think that one of the things that as a highly enlightened human being that
Nirvana.
One of the things I wish to impart to my dear children is the comfort with learning, and that even your own learning experience can be done out loud. I've been doing this for a lot of years now, many decades actually, and that process has always been done out loud from the very inception. Most of the things that I have said that have been different than what I supposed it to be before, I have said those things in public first, and I seem to hear them at the same time that the people I'm speaking to are hearing them. Now, I'm very comfortable with that type of learning. I'm not ashamed of that type of learning. I'm not concerned that I might be wrong, because being wrong isn't that the process by which you become right anyway. I mean, you've got to find out you're wrong before you can be right.
According to Thomas Edison, according to Albert Einstein, there is no other way.
There is none. I mean, the trial and error, and these guys, they thought out loud. And what if they had not thought out loud? What if they had not learned out loud? Can you imagine Edison's shop, where he was working out these experiments all the time, if he would have felt he had to get it right before he did it? You don't have to get it right first. You can learn out loud. It's one of the most wonderful things that's ever happened to me. I don't know where it came from. I don't know if it's just a part of my own personal makeup or my comfort that I've had with the gospel and whatever my perception was of it. I just kind of thought everybody wanted to know the truth regardless. My concept of understanding truth is I'm going to have to change my mind if I'm going to do that. And I'm comfortable with changing my mind. That's quite all right. But I'm not going to change my mind on flimsy evidence. I'm just not going to do that. So I would like people to become comfortable with learning out loud. It's a sweet place to be, to where that all of this is done out in the open. You know, we're not trying to exact our doctrine before we say it. Now, there are some things that I have come to conclusions of. I had one of my dear friends ask me, Mike, are you willing to give up your persuasion of the virgin birth? And I said, well, of course. When I say of course, I really mean it. I'm willing to give that up. But it's not going to be because someone like Bishop Spong has come up with a word definition for the word virgin and now has declared that the virgin birth is completely erroneous. In fact, let me just tell you about that little experience this past week. This may be one of the most interesting things that's happened to me this week.
Oh, we'll just go back to the beginning of the show.
We'll go back to the beginning. Yes, here we go. So someone sent me a clip of Bishop Spong and his question and answer session, and they wanted me to hear the question about the virgin birth. And I listened to all of the question and answer session. I find Bishop Spong interesting to listen to. It is
he makes you think. He makes me think.
Yes, yes, he does. And he's a nice old man, you know. He just seems to be, you know, if I had a grandpa, I want him to be it, you know.
Yeah, and on that video, he leaves the lid down.
Yes, absolutely.
Man's a gentleman.
It has to be. I mean, that's nirvana, isn't it?
Certainly enlightenment, mate. Well, maybe it's just self-preservation in a family of five women.
Yes, I think that's exactly what he spoke of, which he spoke of with great fondness for his family, and I admired that tremendously. But his conclusions at the end were limited, but he wrapped up his views about the virgin birth by quoting from Isaiah that a virgin would be with child. And so he took the Hebrew word virgin, and he said that it didn't mean anything more than just a young girl or a maid. Young maid. That Hebrew word only shows up about seven times in the Old Testament. And every place it shows up, Barris, the best I could tell, it would be describing someone that we today would call a virgin. The context sure seems to relate that. Of course, then I went to the issue of the context. So I thought, well, I'm just going to read the verse, at least in context, because, you know, we were very good in the Word of Faith movement. I think the reason I'm keen on this is because I did it so well to lift the Greek or a Hebrew translation out and forget about the context. You're preaching the Hebrew word.
Oh, you're way above us. I don't think I can have oneness with you. You're too far above me.
You are preaching the Hebrew word, the Greek word, and forget the context altogether, which is exactly what Spong had to do. Because when you read the verse, I literally laughed because the context says, for I, God, and the term God there is Adonai, which is a term that's used only for God. For I, Adonai, will do a miraculous act. Then the neutered version of Spawn's definition, a young girl's going to have a baby.
Neutered. That's funny.
Since we're talking about virgins, we might as well.
Really?
Now, I might be convinced that this Hebrew word doesn't mean what we understand it to be today. But the one thing I do understand is that a young girl getting pregnant is not a miraculous work performed by Adonai.
Even if the work didn't mean miracle, even if it was I, Adonai, am going to do something.
Yes.
Well, it didn't take him, did it? It just took her and another fella.
Well, he says it was him. We got the dude standing up confessing who daddy is. It's me, Adonai. I am going to do this. And when I do this, she's going to get pregnant.
Why is it so important for people to say, nah, no one rises from the dead because people don't rise from the dead. Therefore, Jesus couldn't have risen from the dead because people don't rise from the dead. Therefore, Jesus. What makes us indulge in this circular reasoning like this? And just in what seems to me to be a pure pursuit of denying the miraculous.
Well, it is. And then but most of the people who do that then turn right around and make daily life miraculous. This is God doing this. This is all spiritual. See, we don't ever lose our spiritual mind. It's just where we place it.
Mm.
If you take your spiritual mind away from the miraculous pertaining to, well, let's just say it, the virgin birth, the life, death, burial, and resurrection of Jesus, your spiritual mind is not going to leave you. You're going to place that spirituality someplace else. It is misplaced when you take it away from the cross and place it into daily life.
Where is it placed perfectly?
It is placed perfectly when the mind conceives that we have been made one through this powerful intervention by Adonai, beginning with a virgin birth, a life that was God in the flesh. Let me finish this up about that verse. The last of that verse, Barris, says, and his name. Now, God said, I'm going to do this. Think about the power of this verse. It is growing on me by the second. And his name shall be called Emmanuel, God with us. God says, I'm going to do something. And as a result of what I do, a girl is going to get pregnant. I think the daddy just confessed.
And the result was going to be something called
God with us. Seems to be a real logical train of thought there. And to lift a single Hebrew word out of its context and then cause it to become completely benign as to any context and actually taking it out of even other verses in the Old Testament, some seven places where it sure seems to be talking about virgins, what we would call a virgin today. You know, there's a powerful story here. So in that, it frustrates me.
Mate, the word absolutely means virgin in the Hebrew. It was translated into the English under the word maid for one very simple reason, that a maid was the word for virgin in Middle English. Yeah,
absolutely.
Now, if you wanted to deflower a young lady, it was called taking her maidenhood. That yes. was what, pardon me, but that's what the hymen was called the maidenhood. That was deflowering a maid. This yes. is, I mean, you've really got to be educated. You've got to have a master's in theology to mess this up, haven't you, mate?
Yeah, absolutely. Now, anyone can determine whether or not they think this actually happened or not. But you cannot, with any intellectual integrity, look at these verses in Scripture and extricate this word out and change the meaning of an entire story. In the one verse, there's an entire story. God didn't just say that a miraculous act was going to happen and a girl was going to get pregnant. He confessed to being the one that would do it.
You usually got to force fellas to do that, but he just hey, listen, this whole thing that we're talking about right now is part of a much larger discussion that brought us to this topic, and that was, how do you arrive at the truth? And I want to read something which I think a buddy of mine wrote, and it just says it really for what we're trying to say about this. He writes, I found, and I think that this was Jim Palmer, who wrote a book called Wide Open Spaces, I found that most people don't really want to know the truth. There are plenty of people who want to know the truth on their terms or require that the truth be contained within certain boundaries of comfort. But truth can never be known this way. You have to seek truth from a place of not knowing. And that can be very threatening because we think we already know the truth or we are afraid of what the truth might be.
Yes, I concur with that. And let me add this that I've said over the years, and that is, you cannot say you are seeking truth if you are wanting to know how to be healed. You cannot say you're seeking truth if the result of your search for truth is supposed to end in your being wealthy.
So if you say you're seeking for truth, but you are expecting to better yourself out of it, or if it's a self-serving thing, is that what you're saying, Mike?
Absolutely. Truth has to be sought for in and of itself. It cannot be sought for its benefits, for our own self-serving motives. When it comes to moving away from the gospel to embrace something else, let me encourage those of you who are considering that. And we have folks that are considering that.
You mean folks who've come out of different belief systems, they've come into the gospel revolution and they're thinking of moving on, is that right?
Yes.
Yeah.
And not to other religions. They're thinking of moving on into atheism. We've had people in the gospel revolution to move on to atheism. Considering moving on, let it be known from my heart, I have no warnings to you or to anyone else. If this gospel revolution doesn't stand for anything other than freedom of thought, then it stands for nothing at all as far as I'm concerned. But let me encourage you to take into consideration the body of work called the Scriptures, that over a couple of centuries, at least, writers and prophets foretold with clarity and with accuracy. If you had any writings from any other group, from prophets existing, not even in the same century, prophesying and coming to the same conclusions about the way things are, about the way things would eventually be, there is nothing more consistent than this thing called the Scriptures. This powerful statement by Isaiah, and I, Adonai, will do a miraculous work. I will do it, and this virgin will have a child as a result of what I do. I don't see how you get around that. That's God saying, I'm the daddy. And especially when you named a kid, you know, you name the kid based
That's a great point.
You know, you name the kid yourself. Who named the kid? The daddy named the kid.
You named him after himself. Don't forget.
Named him after himself, which isn't that what we daddies want to do? When you see things like that, please don't dismiss this so quickly.
There are plenty of people out there, and they have come into this, and they've moved on from this. I'm thinking of great people like Carlton Pearson and so forth. Mm-hmm. And sometimes the moving on, and I'm not saying this about Carlton, but sometimes moving on past where we're at is simply their minds taking them to where they logically probably always wanted to be. But more to the point, I'd encourage all of our listeners, don't be too fast to come to any conclusion until you test it.
Absolutely.
And if you find that that works for you, and remember this, you're still one with us. You're still one mm-hmm. with God.
And that is the difference between one and oneness. Is regardless of your perception, belief or lack of belief, awareness or lack of awareness, we are one. And in that aspect, you can't ever leave the group anyway.
You and the Almighty had a oneness injection.
And so it is that we must leave you, folks, but not before we say a huge thank you to all those gospel revolutionaries out there who make it possible to bring you this PowerCast each and every week. And yes, I'm even talking about you, the people who keep emailing us asking for the special barbecue pork, barbecue ribs recipe. You ain't going to get it. Come on, you got to join the members site for that. These guys are our heroes, aren't they, Michael? These guys who just keep giving and giving.
I am so sorry. I was reading something. I don't have a clue what you said.
I said you're an ignorant old cow. What are you doing with your life?
Well, that's easy to answer.
If you'd like to join us in increasing our coverage of this gospel of grace and peace, call our office at area code 352-569-4889 and speak to Jeffrey. If you would like to leave a message for the show, simply telephone us on 123-456-40971. Our web address is www.gospelrevolution.com, and you can catch us on Facebook at Friends of Mike Williams. Are you listening, Mike?
I am.
You are now, yeah. At Friends of Mike Williams and the Gospel Revolution. Remember, no Christians were harmed in the making of this program, and for a quick fix, night or day, our radio station is broadcasting all the gospel, all the time, at gospelrevolution.radiostream123.com. So it's good night from myself, Beres Bartlett, at the highly chromed and superbly outfitted steam-driven Gospel Revolution Studios in Nashville, Tennessee. And from Houston, Texas,
this is Michael Williams. And thank you guys so much. This is always such a lovely experiment and experience. I hope that as we continue to venture into these subjects, that you realize that myself, I'm approaching it with a great lack of full understanding, but I think enough to where that we can approach it and respond to some things. I think comparing the gospel to all other spiritual inclinations is a very powerful thing to do. So thank you for listening in. Let us know how you're enjoying this. I know I'm enjoying the heck out of it.
So remember to join us again next week, same time, same channel, where we're going to do the same thing all over again.
except Nirvana.
You're a sick puppy, Williams.
Around here, Mildred?
Always. Oh, and it's so embarrassing.
No, I love it. It reminds me of home.